going on, guys? On today's pod, we'll go ahead and be covering all the events that happened over the weekend and diving into the new National Security Advisor, John Bolton. So let's go. Welcome to Excuse My Politics, presented by Bad News Media. It is March 27th, and it's been an interesting week since the last time we recorded and spoke. On Friday, the Trump administration did a news dump at 9:30, hoping nobody would notice. Little did they know, we are on top of their shit 24/7. They announced that they were going to go ahead and ban transgender service members from serving in our armed forces, which is really just a vile act. We decided a long time ago that no sex should be disbarred from serving this country. We allow men and women to serve in our armed forces, and that is what transgender people are. They're genetically men and women, just like everybody else, but they were born into a sex that they don't identify with. So this is just an absolute disgusting move by the military. The ACLU will be all over this. Other civil rights groups will go ahead and be suing the government, I am sure. I apologize to those service members who are already currently serving in our armed forces and putting their lives at risk for the disrespect that has been shown to you by your commander-in-chief and by the members of the Republican Party. But we will not let you down. We will fight for you every day, just as we've been doing, and we will straighten this out for you. We also had one of the most hopeful days I think we've had in a very long time on the March for Lives on Saturday. There were some phenomenal speakers. Now, I normally hold off speeches for Thursday to close this out, but I was so moved by one of the speeches, and it just gave me an absolute kind of moment of hope that I feel like it's appropriate to play it today. So at the end of the pod, we'll go ahead and I'll play kind of my favorite speech from the weekend. And then on Sunday, we had the big Stormy Daniels interview. It was pretty much a dud from what I expected. Now, part of that is because I am in tune to the news on a daily, minute-by-minute basis. So if you're somebody like me who's a news junkie, a political junkie, nothing really surprised you in this interview. For those of you who don't follow the news as much, there's probably some things in there that were kind of big for you. Some of the things I picked up on was, of course, in their first meeting, Donald Trump was talking all about himself. But then it got into the creepy, as it always does with Donald Trump. Stormy Daniels brought up how Trump told her that she reminded him of Ivanka, which, once again, always in some form of a sexual way does Ivanka pop up in a lot of these stories. It's really just disgusting and nauseating. First of all, to be talking about anything Donald Trump does sexually, it makes your ears bleed. But Ivanka always seems to pop up in these stories. The other thing, which is no surprise, is Donald Trump doesn't treat his marriage as a marriage. He has no respect for the institution of marriage. He doesn't have any respect for women. Basically brushed his wife aside as no big deal. He had unprotected sex with a porn star shortly after his wife had given birth, I believe is when this was going on, or she was pregnant. Either way, it doesn't matter. He was having unprotected sex with somebody while married to somebody else. It's still married. Then there was the kind of legality that they got to in the second piece, which is more of the important part for us. The payments to keep Stormy Daniels quiet are somewhat of a legal mess. They had Trevor Porter, who is a Bush-appointed representative. He kind of talked to the aspect of where Donald Trump could be in some big trouble with this contribution, because $130,000 of hush money around the campaign is in his view, considered an in-kind contribution. Now, this hasn't gone through the legal system yet, but he believes that this would be an in-kind contribution. It's more than any one individual can give, so Cohen has his lawyer, who paid this money, has exceeded his contribution limits. Also, if the president reimbursed him for that, that is a problem for the president because it violates campaign finance laws. So it's bad if he didn't repay Cohen for Cohen, and it's bad if he did repay Cohen for Trump. So you can already see where this is going. Cohen's about to be thrown under the bus big time. But that is going to be the interesting part. That's the part that we're going to have to see how it plays out in court. Now, Donald Trump is trying to get this moved to federal court, which is an important distinction because that means we won't have access to a lot of this information that comes out in discovery and in testimonies. It'll all be sealed and hidden from the public. We want this to stay in state court. So we'll see what happens there, see how it plays out. But I do want to talk about John Bolton,
President Trump's new national security advisor. So what is the national security advisor? Well, it's somebody who advises the president on national security matters. It's a hugely important role. It is not something that is Senate confirmed, though. So there is no confirmation hearing that John Bolton will have to go through, which is really unfortunate for us in this one, because if there was ever a time to have somebody go through a confirmation hearing, it would be now with John Bolton, which we'll get to in a little bit. But the national security advisor role is basically responsible and a person who makes sure the president hears the views of all the national security agencies. So that includes, for example, the State Department, Defense Department. They kind of coordinate the policy information inside the administration. They manage relationships between the agencies. And their biggest function is to give the president a buffet style of options when it comes to matters of national security. They have to be able to separate personal views and give the information needed so the president can make an effective decision. They have to be willing to hear new ideas from the different agencies. They need to be willing to process information at high speed. They need to be a well-rounded person. John Bolton is none of that. So to give you a little history, because Bolton is a well-documented figure within our political experience, mostly because while he did work in the Bush administration and played a role in that administration, we have kind of what his viewpoints were from there. But he then became a Fox News pundit. And so there is a lot out there on what his views are, where he stands on a lot of things, and he is very controversial, to say the least. So Bolton is a big advocate for military action. It's his first, second, third, fourth, and fifth option whenever we're dealing with a problem on the international scale. So that's concerning. Bolton's history is well known, and he has things including the attempt to pressure State Department intelligence professionals into accepting a false conclusion that Cuba had biological weapons. He also had an incident where he was harassing an Agency of International Development whistleblower. The contractor, Melody Townsell, told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in 2005 that Bolton chased her through a Moscow hotel in 1994 and, quote, throwing things at me, shoving threatening letters under my door, and generally behaving like a madman. Sounds like a real swell guy. This is not somebody who you want in a position advising the president on extremely tense decision-making processes. I mean, if something were to happen, God forbid, and we were locked in the Situation Room and the president's got him in his ear, you want that person to be cool, calm, and collective. And that is not who Mr. Bolton is. He's a bully. He cherry picks information from intelligence reports. He's manipulative. He tries to harass people who have differing opinions of him and really undercut them in their jobs and careers. So not a great guy. But this type of behavior, too, in the past made Senate Republicans who kind of studied his history turn him down for a U.S. ambassadorship that he got appointed to. So he is not somebody who's looked upon in great lights in a lot of circles, but he's a Fox News guy. Donald Trump loves him because he thinks very similar to Donald Trump in some ways. So he's going to be a yes man. But it's the things that he's done recently that should really scare us, based off of what is happening in the world today. He has done things like argue for the pre
mature attack of North Korea. So he believes in order to neutralize the threat of its nuclear weapons, we should set off a war that would be catastrophic to America's interests. Thousands upon hundreds of thousands, potentially millions, could die in that. It would also set off a chain reaction in Southeast Asia with some of our allies like Japan and South Korea. Lots of South Koreans would die in this war, not to include Americans. He also, in that same breath of saying we need to strike North Korea first, has also disparaged diplomatic efforts with North Korea. He is on the record discouraging the plan to talk with North Korea in May that Donald Trump has accepted from North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. He also holds very hostile views towards the Iran deal, similar to Mike Pompeo, who is slated to be the next Secretary of State, which I covered in a previous pod. So make sure you're subscribing, you're following us on Facebook and on Twitter feed at @badnews_media to make sure you're keeping up with all the kind of crazy going on in the world. But he is also for tearing up the Iran deal. He would like to basically get rid of this deal that has been in place since 2015 and has significantly limited Iran's nuclear power. He's called for the bombing of Iran instead of diplomatic measures. He has also been not an ally of the United Nations and any other multi-international kind of conventions that we've done. So he is not a fan of diplomacy in any shape or form. Like I said, his first, second, third, fourth option is always war, which is a little ironic because as it surfaced this week, he had some interesting viewpoints on the Vietnam War. So he is from the generation, same as Donald Trump, that was eligible to serve in Vietnam, serve this country proudly. He was part of the generation that was drafted into the conflict. Now, he is on the record at the time and past that supporting the Vietnam War. But in his 25th year Yale reunion book, he apparently wrote this. "I confess, I had no desire to die in a Southeast Asia rice paddy. I considered the war in Vietnam already lost." If you have the good fortune of making it to Washington, D.C., I recommend you go visit the Vietnam Wall. On there, you'll find 57,939 names of individuals who served and fought in Vietnam proudly and made the ultimate sacrifice to this country. One that John Bolton wasn't willing to do, one that Donald Trump wasn't willing to do, and something you'll generally find among warmongers, which is what John Bolton is. He's a warmonger. He supported the Vietnam War to this day, yet he was not willing to go arm in arm with his fellow Americans into that country and fight for our country. Now, in America, we have a voluntary military, and I don't take the position that I believe that you have to serve in our military to be commander-in-chief. I don't believe that you have to serve in our military to be a senator or congressman or an elected official. It's definitely a plus because it gives you an experience that will help you balance out your decision-making when you decide to send men and women into battle. But it's not a must. That's the point of a voluntary military. And for those individuals who volunteer for our armed forces, we salute you. You are people who put it all on the line for your country. You are true Americans in every sense of the way. You do something that only a handful of other Americans can do and have the courage to do. But I firmly believe that in this country, if you are lucky enough to be born in America and decide to stay in America and make it your home, that you signed a social contract that if our elected officials, which you have a role in choosing, decide that we are going to go to war, and then because of that war, we have a draft, it is your responsibility to go serve. And if you don't do that, for as far as I'm concerned, you are not an American. You're not patriotic. And in this country, that used to be the norm, that if this country called on you to serve, you went and you served. It was all that way up through World War II. People would do anything they could to make sure they went and served their country, even if they had medical conditions that would prevent them from serving. They would find a way around that. So I do believe that if you have a medical condition that prevents you from serving or you're furthering your education, then you should get a deferment. But outside of that, there is nothing that should prevent you from serving. And these guys who bang the war drums
and people like John Bolton, who are warmongers, I mean, that is what he is. He's a warmonger, as we've said. They do not serve. They run in the opposite direction. It's somebody else's kid that's serving. It's somebody else who is dying or having their life torn apart by this conflict. And for John Bolton to be so for military action, and when it was his turn to serve his country, he chose not to do so, is the absolute most hypocritical thing I can ever think of. And in my book, he isn't an American, because he did not go and serve. And he is constantly banging the war drum. And the most recent example of this is the Iraq War. He was a big, big, big person who favored the Iraq War. Even to this day, he doesn't think it's a mistake. And he's on the record as saying the Iraqis would welcome American troops and the United States' role would be over quickly because of the way the war would play out. Obviously, that's wrong. But he's somebody who oversimplifies things. He's wrongheaded, stubborn-headed. He believes in one objective. He fetishizes war. Him and Donald Trump and the rest of them have seen one too many war films, and they think it's awesome, and they can get their rocks off by sending men and women into combat. And our military are some bad motherfuckers. And if you send them into conflict, they will fuck your shit up. But we should not be relying on them to do everything. We should be exploring diplomatic options. We should be working with our allies to solve issues. And this should scare the crap out of us that John Bolton, a man who does not view those as actual policy decisions, he believes that our military is the only tool we should use to solve conflicts, should scare the crap out of all of us. And there's nothing we can really do except for stay vigilant, put pressure on this administration. Hopefully he's out the door quickly. I mean, the lifespan of a Trump administration person is very short, so we'll have to stay on it. But I do want to leave you with a message of hope from this week's March for Our Lives. And guys, I got to say, the future of this country is in great, great hands. I mean, that was one of the most inspiring things I have seen. Of the fact that a group of high schoolers has been able to move the needle as they have is, it's incredible. But my favorite speech from an 11-year-old named Naomi, and I mean, she did an outstanding job. And if she can be out there being the change, being the difference, so can you. So it's time to get involved if you haven't already done so. And I'm going to leave you with her speech. It's fantastic. Listen all the way through. And remember, guys, be the change.
My name is Naomi, and I'm 11 years old. Me and my friend Carter led a walkout at our elementary school on the 14th. We walked out for 18 minutes, adding a minute to honor Cortland Arrington, an African-American girl who was the victim of gun violence in her school in Alabama after the Parkland shooting. I am here today to represent Cortland Arrington. I am here today to represent Hadiyah Pendleton. I am here today to represent Tiana Thompson, who at just 16 was shot dead in her home here in Washington, D.C. I am here today to acknowledge and represent the African American girls whose stories don't make the front page of every national newspaper. Whose stories don't lead on the evening news. I represent the African-American women who are victims of gun violence, who are simply statistics instead of vibrant, beautiful girls at full of potential. It is my privilege to be here today. I am indeed full of privilege. My voice has been heard. I am here to acknowledge their stories, to say they matter, to say their names, because I can, and I was asked to be. For far too long, these names, these black girls and women, have been just numbers. I'm here to say never again for those girls too. I am here to say that everyone should value those girls too. People have said that I am too young to have these thoughts on my own. People have said that I am a tool of some nameless adult. It's not true. My friends and I might still be 11, and we might still be in elementary school, but we know life isn't equal for everyone, and we know what is right and wrong. also know that we stand in the shadow of the Capitol, and we know that we have 7 short years until we too have the right to vote. So I'm here today to honor the words of Toni Morrison. If there is a book that you want to read, but it hasn't been written yet, you must be the one to write it. I urge everyone here and everyone who hears my voice to join me in telling the stories that aren't told. To honor the girls, the women of color who were murdered at disproportionate rates in this nation. I urge each of you to help me write the narrative for this world and understand so that these girls and women are never forgotten. Thank you.
Hey, NBC News viewers, thanks for checking out our YouTube channel. Subscribe by clicking on that button down here and click on any of the videos over here to watch the latest interviews, show highlights, and digital exclusives. Thanks for watching.